Welcome to SMR's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This past week's most popular post on sportsmedres.org discussed a recent systematic review that found that there is limited evidence that iontophoresis, ice massage, ultrasound, phonophoresis, or extracorporeal shockwave therapy may benefit patients with medial tibial stress syndrome. However, there is no evidence to support other commonly used treatment options for medial tibial stress syndrome, for example, low-energy laser treatment, stretching or strengthening exercises, or sports compression stockings. Various treatment modalities exist for medial tibial stress syndrome, although the effectiveness of each individual therapeutic intervention remains uncertain. Winters et al. Conducted a systematic review to determine which treatment options were most efficacious. The authors searched for published and unpublished studies, including randomized and non-randomized trials, that evaluated changes in pain, recovery time, or global perceived effect. 11 trials met the inclusion criteria. All randomized control trials revealed a high risk of bias. Per Smith et al. In 1986, all examined treatments which included iontophoresis, ice massage, ultrasound, and phonophoresis offered significant pain relief when compared to a control group which received no treatment modality. Of the available treatment options, extracorporeal shockwave therapy demonstrated the most potential as assessed by degree of recovery and pain severity. The authors concluded that no intervention was the most efficacious in treating medial tibial stress syndrome and that low-energy laser treatment, stretching or strengthening exercises, sports compression stockings, leg braces, or pulsed electromagnetic fields had no treatment effect in any of the reviewed studies. Frequently encountered, medial tibial stress syndrome is widely accepted as an overuse injury afflicting the periosteum of the tibia. Initial treatment involves modified rest, such as no-impact cardiovascular training, including aquatherapy or cycling, and evaluation of foot mechanics for overpronation or pes planus. Additional treatment modalities, as reviewed by the authors, include iontophoresis, phonophoresis, ice massage, ultrasound therapy, and extracorporeal shockwave therapy. Two major points can be drawn from this study. First, current available research on the treatment of medial tibial stress syndrome is limited and confounded by numerous variables, including flawed methodologies, multiple biases, duration of follow-up, and the lack of a universal outcome measure. Secondly, though this review did not yield a gold standard for the treatment of medial tibial stress syndrome, it did shed light on the efficacy as well as the ineffectiveness of available treatment options. This has a strong clinical implication. Low-energy laser treatment, stretching and strengthening exercises, sports compression stockings, lower leg braces, and pulsed electromagnetic fields have not been proven to be effective in treating medial tibial stress syndrome. In contrast, the previously mentioned modalities may offer some benefit. Concerted research incorporating a clinical measure such as the number needed to treat using one or more of these treatment modalities would help in furthering our approach to patients with medial tibial stress syndrome. This past week, we also had four other posts on sportsmedres.org. That's res.org. The first post offered a second opinion on the study I just described, while the second post announced the release of a position statement on behalf of the Ad Hoc Research Working Group on Body Composition, Health and Performance under the auspices of the IOC Medical Commission. This position statement discussed minimizing the health risk to athletes who compete in weight-sensitive sports. And the third post described the secondary analysis from a clinical trial which suggested that a patient with an anterior cruciate ligament rupture will regain muscle strength and the ability to perform functional movements regardless of whether or not the ACL is reconstructed. And finally, the fourth post described a study that found that the number of knockouts among boxers and mixed martial arts fighters predicted structural damage in the brain. This finding suggests that the number of knockouts a fighter endures in their career can predict how much microstructural damage the brain suffered. Don't forget that we also share extra material on social media. For example, this past week, our social media posts included a study that reported that club swimmers have a high frequency of practices comparable to collegiate and professional swimmers. They believe that shoulder pain is normal and should be tolerated to complete practice. So remember to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.